For the rest of the hour, CO2, carbon dioxide. There's a lot of talk these days about reducing carbon emissions, but what about catching those CO2 emissions before they billow out of smokestacks and into the atmosphere? Scientists are already thinking about the best way to do that. Of course, once you capture the stuff, there's that problem, a slight little problem, detail. Where do we put it? There's always been talk lately about putting it underground. Sequestering it is the catchphrase. But there is fear that all that CO2 might leak out someday, come swooshing back up in a ground-hugging, suffocating blanket. Well, now there is another, more creative idea. A group of researchers says they say that they have perfected a place to put it safely away in cavernous volcanic rock beds nearly 10,000 feet underwater, under the Pacific Ocean. They say that these basalt formations off the coast of Oregon and Washington have huge empty cavities capable of locking in carbon dioxide harmlessly, and these pockets could be extensive enough to store up to 150 years of U.S. CO2 emissions. But how do you get the CO2 down there? And what stops it from just bubbling back up through the water? That's the most interesting part. We'll talk about that. Joining me now to talk about the possibility of storing carbon emissions deep under the ocean, under the seafloor, that's research out now in the Journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, is Dr. David Goldberg. He is a geophysicist at Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory. He joins us on the phone today from Texas. Welcome to the program, Dr. Goldberg.
Good afternoon, Ira. How are you?
Good afternoon. How did you come up with this idea? Give us the ABCs of how you do this.
Well, first of all, we were looking at a downstream solution that was sufficiently large to deal with a huge climate problem. And one of the options that came to mind, being a marine geologist and geophysicist, was looking below the seabeds. And that indeed is something that this area offers, is a very well-studied seabed. And it basically has a vast repository of basalt layers that have large cavities, at least large volumes. The cavities themselves are more like fissures and and gaps, but it will fill and it will hold a lot of fluid.
Well, let's talk about the physics of what happens. Let's say you pump this stuff down into the basalt. Does it go into the water? Does it go right into the rock? What happens to it?
Well, what we've considered here in this report for this research is pumping in pressurized and liquidized CO2 directly into the basalt that is open and porous. It then will dissolve into the existing fluids that are in those rocks, which is predominantly seawater and various minerals that are mixed with the seawater, and remain there for a period of time. Now, that's the attraction of this location, is that it can remain there, we feel, fairly securely for decades and centuries while it reacts with those rocks and with the seawater. And that's what is a really nice attraction. That chemical reaction will leave it in a form that is permanent and a benign carbonates, essentially chalks, that fill those pores over time.
So you turn the CO2 into chalk.
Effectively, those are the minerals that will be reacting. It's iron and calcium in the rocks and in the seawater that will react with the dissolved CO2.
And it locks itself into the basalt.
Yes, that's exactly what happens. It deposits itself in those open spaces. The rates of all those processes are what we're considering examining in more detail with a pilot experiment. But the potential is there. Our laboratory and local field tests show that those processes happen at a reasonably fast rate, and they are basically permanent and benign.
So there's no fear of it bubbling out again because you have chalk instead of CO2.
Ultimately, yes, that's exactly the idea, permanent and secure. In the meantime, while that process is happening, the advantage of the basalt and under the ocean is that it is in the area that we've identified. It's capped very well by sealing fine-grained sediments, and that will keep it in those basalt formations while those chemical reactions take place, we believe, for a sufficiently long time. And then, in fact, that will be an additional seal protecting the oceans from escape.
So you have layer upon layer, like a big club sandwich.
Yeah, you could call it a nice sandwich, and hopefully it won't have leaks. If it does, anything unexpected happens. We're also very deep, which has a nice advantage in that CO2 in liquid form will become more dense than seawater at those depths. So if there's a little inadvertent leak, it will essentially tend to sink up into the sediment and not escape out into the ocean.
So you're talking about 10,000 feet below the surface, something like that?
Approximately, yeah. 2,800, 3,000 meters.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep.
Wow. And is it true that there's enough space down there that you could take all of the 150 years' worth of CO2 emissions?
Well, we looked at an area that had the appropriate depths and sediment cover, and we used the existing data from decades of experimentation out in that plate, the Juan de Fuca plate off the coast of Oregon and Washington, and estimated those volumes, and they are large. There's 200 billion tons of or more of volume space for filling, and indeed that if the U.S. stays at its current emission rates for a sense of the size of this reservoir, that's on upwards of 120 to 150 years of current rate U.S. emissions. If those rates go up, of course, which we hope they don't, but that would shorten those numbers of years. But it's a very large reservoir, and certainly one of the big attractions.
Well, you're pretty close to the shoreline of California or even Oregon's CO2. What would you do with New York's side? Yeah, you're talking about piping it across or liquefying and traveling it?
Well, indeed, that's probably for the global solution. No, there's other reservoirs that would be much more practical. But and the sense that I gave you for the U.S. was just to give us a sense of the scale. But it is a viable solution, we think, by pipeline from, say, West Coast sources of emissions once they're captured.
We're talking about CO2 sequestering under the ocean floor this hour. Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. David Goldberg at the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory. Of course, there's basalt all over the ocean, all over the world, right, on the seabeds?
Oh, indeed, the entire ocean is comprised of basaltic lava at the top of the crust. It's what forms it at the upper crust layer, and it is not... It's just a question of what depth it's at and how long it has been buried and overlain by additional basalt and sediment. So it's everywhere, but in the ocean area that offshore Oregon, it's at the appropriate depth and still has a remainder of volume and pore space that we think will keep CO2 flowing. As basalt gets older in the oceans and with piles and piles of sediment on it, of course, it can be miles below the seabed, first of all, which is not very accessible, much less accessible. And more importantly, it'll be filled by a natural process, which is the weathering of the basalt by seawater. And that does exactly the same thing, which is precipitate depositing carbonate and chalks and other minerals in the open pore spaces.
Is this cost effective? I mean, would people say, hey, you know, it's cheap enough to do this? And is it energy neutral?
It certainly is not going to be the easiest solution, being offshore for one, and being that there is a infrastructure of drilling and piping and pumping that would need to be installed. But the size of the problem is so large that will have to be dealt with in some place, ultimately, no matter what the final repository for the CO2 is. So we felt that looking at the security here and putting a value on the security of the solution as well as the size of it, the fact that it is a large repository in this one location, really has value that would depend on how efficient that whole industry of sequestration becomes over time.
And you think it's a better solution than pumping it back underground in old oil wells and things like that?
Well, it's a larger solution. It's the first really significant size solution that I think we've put out there that has a viable size to make a dent in the problem.
And you have a test bed that you're working on.
A test bed.
You have a site that you're experimenting on.
Well, the area that we're looking at is, of course, an area that we've studied for many researchers have studied for quite some time, decades. Hmm. And we have an idea to go back and do a pilot experiment by reoccupying one of those existing sites and actually look at the fate of the CO2, a small-scale experiment, over time.
And Lamont already have one? You have one up there in your lab that you've tested out?
We've looked at the rocks that are similar to basalt, certainly in the laboratory at Lamont Doherty, and looked at those areas for the study of how fast those reaction rates occur. It's not indeed the undersea, exactly the undersea formation.
Right.
But we get a good sense of what we think is going on, and that was a big piece of this research and putting it forward.
Dr. Goldberg, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
And good luck. We'll follow the progress. Dr. David Goldberg is a geophysicist, yes, at Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory. And if you're having trouble visualizing the storage process, Flora Lichtman, our digital producer, is here to help us. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me, Ira.
Now, you actually went out to Dr. Goldberg's drilling site.
That's right.
Where was that?
It's out in Palisades, New York. It's about an hour outside of New York City, and yeah, I took a look at their borehole.
They have a borehole that he talked about as experiment, and you have made a video out of that.
Yeah, so they have a borehole in the backyard of Lamont Doherty, and it goes down 1,000 feet into basalt. And so they can try out, as I understood it, some of these ideas there.
Mm-hmm. And you made you went there, you videoed it. If we go to our website at sciencefriday.com, it is the video pick of the week.
Right.
And you actually made a model of that sandwich I talked about in your kitchen, but you didn't use a sandwich.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a little hard to imagine what this might look like under the sea. So, so I made a model using breakfast cereals. And, yeah, I think that's all.
Layers of breakfast cereal.
You'll have to take a look.
You'll have to take a look. Go to our site, sciencefriday.com. Look for the video pick of the week. And we have all kinds of videos there. And you can see Flora Lichtman's terrific creative design. Thank you, Flora.
Thanks for having me.
Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarian Kim Molesky and from Ron Curtis and Jenny Lawson at WWNO. Surf over to our website at Science Friday. And I only see Flora's video of breakfast cereal in her kitchen imitating this borehole. It's quite interesting. I think you'll learn a lot from it. Also, other videos are there and podcasts and blogging. And also, you can leave us email there. And we're looking for more of your videos. If you see Flora's video and you like it and you want to make one of your own, please send it to us. We're more than happy to take a look at it and see if we can put it up on our website. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.